Kutcher and Rich. Can mornings get any better?
Yeah. Could you please help me?
Kutcher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
He is the first player in NFL history with back-to-back 200-yard games. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
The days on the boulevard are lending. We used to kick routines and the presence was fitting. It was I, the abstract.
And me, the five-footer. I kicks the mad style, so step off the Frankfurter.
98.5 The Sports Hub with Kutcher and Rich. Bert Breer is the main man over there at MMQB. He took over for the curly-headed wonder, Peter King. And Bert is in studio with us. First of all, Bert, your feelings on Baker Mayfield and the ability to do this again.
I thought he changed everything when he came into that game. Yeah. It was the energy in the building, the way the ball came out. Like, you saw the team. It's almost like when you watched him come in the game, it's almost like the teammate, like his teammates all of a sudden had this belief. And I was texting with one of their assistant coaches after the game last night, and the first thing he said to me was, "The cat's out of the bag," which tells me, like, they've seen this the last few weeks in practice. They've seen the way this is going. They've seen that he's ready to play. They've seen the difference that he can make.
Did that piss off the players that they waited this long to put him in? Because obviously the guys around him knew that he could do this.
Tyrod looked awful.
Like I didn't expect that.
It just, he looked really bad the first quarter and a half before he has a concussion. And I think, like, the natural question, I mean, they were saying it on the broadcast too. Like, this was trending towards, like, Hugh Jackson having a decision to make at halftime. Yeah. So I think that that's one of those things where he kind of got bailed out by the concussion in a way where he didn't have to make that decision. He didn't have to bench Tyrod Taylor. But, I mean, this is what a lot of the scouts, the coaches who liked Baker Mayfield said about him in the spring, which is, I mean, I had a quarterback's coach say he's the most accurate quarterback I've ever evaluated. And you can see it, like, you can see that out there. You can see the way the ball comes out. I mean, for a guy who's, I think the best way to put it was somebody said, like I had someone say to me, he just generates a lot of energy. Like, you watch, like, his body, it just generates a lot of energy. I know it's a weird way to put it, but, like, for a guy who's small, like, you generally don't see a guy where the ball comes out that way.
Yeah.
You know, generally, they're bigger guys, and it's just the way he moves, even though he's not like a 4.4 or a 4.5 guy, he's very sudden. And it's just, you can see, like, the energy. And okay, it kind of projects across the offense.
All right, so it's a short week for the Jets. I don't know how much of a chance they had to prepare for him.
Right, and Darnold looked great in his opener, too. So.
Right, and so I'm looking at this, and we've seen quarterbacks a lot of times come out and play in the style of offense that they're used to and have success. How much of this do you think is sustainable?
Well, I look at it the same way, like Mahomes in Kansas City, too. Like, I think the way we... Because I think offensive coaches are creative enough now and open-minded enough now to bring in some of the things these guys do in college.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what happens is you get, like, this 4 to 6 week period when these guys start playing where, A, there's not tape on the quarterbacks, and B, the coaches are doing some things that they haven't shown before.
Right.
And so, like, there's this period where I think defenses are sort of catching up to what you're doing with a young quarterback, and young quarterbacks play really well. This actually happened with Carson Wentz 2 years ago, where first 4 weeks of the season, he looked unstoppable with the Eagles as a rookie, and then he really leveled off. I think, like, over the last 12 games that year, it was like 9 touchdowns against 13 interceptions. And then he matured and looked like was an MVP candidate his second year.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I think a lot, like, this will happen with Mahomes, I think, and I think it'll happen with Mayfield, too. Like, you might see, like, a few more games like this, and then it'll level off a little bit. I do think there are some things that you watched last night that look, like, real.
Yeah.
Like, the arm strength, the accuracy.
Oh, the accuracy was amazing.
The timing, the, like, presence in the pocket. Like, and it's not just athleticism, it's the way he moves. You know, like, he has a way of avoiding the rush. He feels it. Like, it's just one of those things, you know, when you see it. So,
would you still have taken him number one in the draft?
I think that, like, the two guys I liked most were the two guys who went in the top three. So, right. I mean, I think it's sort of, I think both those guys will be okay.
All right, okay, well, do you think that Darnold is in a different situation in that they're not running what he did in college and he's adapting to a new style
of
offense?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same offense that, like, Garoppolo ran in San Francisco last year. Like, so they did some things to help him too. Like, they had, you know, the moving pocket and all of those different things. Now, I think the part of it for the Jets is their offensive line deficiency caught up to them a little bit last night. I think the Browns can get after the passer with Myles Garrett a little bit better than the Lions or the Dolphins could.
Right.
And so I think, like, one of the real deficiencies in the Jets roster finally came back to bite them, and it cost Darnold last night. And you're going to see that a little bit.
Well, speaking of Cleveland, we haven't talked to you since the Josh Gordon trade. Yep. And the one thing that I actually heard you mention yesterday, which is something I had not heard yet, mm-hmm. was about how Cleveland felt that Josh Gordon wasn't in football shape.
Right. And I, you know, I've gotten killed, like, the I think the NBC people put the clip up. And, you know, some people tweeted the picture of him, like, with
just
the,
jacked. Right, right. Yeah. But that's different.
It's not the same thing as being in football shape.
Yeah, you can be absolutely jacked.
And you're not in football shape.
Sure.
And I think that that was part of the frustration with the hamstring. Like, maybe one had something to do with the other.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is that that was an issue for them. Like with, you know, in practice, like, getting him back in football shape. And it's part of that whole overall commitment to football where one of the questions with him is, does he love football? He can clearly play. Does he love football? And, you know, some of these guys, and you've seen it with certain players where they keep themselves in shape, but they're not in great football shape.
Right.
You know, and so with Gordon, one of the things was, is like how do we find a way to get this message through to him? And in the opener, one of the reasons they played him, the number of plays they played him, was because they wanted to show him, dude, you may think you're in great shape. We're going to run you in the ground in the opener, and we're going to show you, like, you still have a ways to go before you're in football shape. Doesn't mean he can't get there. It's just, it was after having him in the building for a month after he took that sabbatical at the start of training camp, they felt like he wasn't where he needed to be from a football conditioning standpoint.
I had never heard the story that you were telling Chris Gasper and Bertrand the other day before he was even signed about the two brothers he has in his life, the two influences pulling him one way or the other.
Yeah.
Do we know anything about whether or not any of these guys traveled to New England and was it a good one or the bad one?
I think part of that, like, is the commitment, the level of commitment the Browns, and look, see, the Browns are an easy target. They were 1-31 over the last 2 years. They've been god-awful since coming back into the league since, in 99, right? But they legitimately did everything to try to get this kid on track. Everything. Like, they put sports psychologists around him. They put, you know, like, the psychiatrists around him. They did so much to try to make it work for him. And part of that was the whole brother thing, which was, you talk to people who've, you know, looked at him and evaluated him since he was back at Baylor. There's one of his brothers who's a great influence on him, and you want to have him around him. And at the time, he was living out in California, and the Browns were trying to get him to move to Northeast Ohio for the football season because they wanted him around him. And then there's another brother who was not as good an influence and who would take him down the wrong road. And it's sort of like, I think the significance of it was, like, how easily influenced the kid is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, he's got self-esteem issues, which I think are part of the root of the substance abuse problem, right? Like, serious insecurity issues. And because of that, like, he's a kid, he had this reputation of being this kid who, like, he'll go whatever way the wind blows him. Like, when he was hanging out with Johnny, right? Yeah. Like, totally went down the wrong path.
Yeah. Manziel?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so what, give us...
He was really close with Johnny.
Okay, so I don't know that. So I don't know if you guys do, but I didn't know that. Talk a little bit about
that. Yeah, I mean, part of it, like, was like, I mean, if you guys go back on their, I think either of their Instagrams, you could probably find it. Like, when they were hanging out at Coachella, and that was when...
They enabled each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Did you know that?
What's
Rich?
That?
Did you know that?
Just in the past, like, 2 days,
okay.
I've been reading about
that. Yeah, I didn't know that.
All this stuff is not well known.
All right, so, Bert, well, you know what? We have to break, and then I'm interested in all this Josh Gordon stuff. I'm interested in your opinion of how he's going to fit in here in New
England.
I think
one of the biggest questions, and if any of the reporters driving down to Foxborough right now is listening, I would love to hear someone ask this. What are the Patriots putting around him, if anything, to try and support him? Because I think that's a huge question.
And also, there was debate if the Patriots organization is better equipped to deal with Josh Gordon.
Right.
And it sounds like with his problems and what Cleveland did, that maybe not. I mean, Cleveland seemed to have done a lot to try to help the guy, but I'm interested in your take on that as well. We will be back with Burt Breer. We'll talk some Josh Gordon.
Also,
we'll
want to find out what the latest on Gronk. That's the other thing, too.
Right. Yeah. Well, he's got that ankle. We'll slap fives with each other. We'll play a little grab ass. That's all coming up.
Welcome back to Patriots All Access. Time to sit down with the coach and have some coffee with the coach. I think that's what we call it. Coach, it's good to see you. Earlier in the week, you make a trade to bring Josh Gordon in. Now, strictly talking about this kid on the field, and you brought multiple guys in to help bolster that position. What do you see in him on the field from a talent standpoint that maybe we can make this work here?
Yeah, well, I think everybody feels like this is a talented player. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
He said it with a nice tone to his voice.
No, what happened, so Belichick loves sitting down with Scott Zolak. So the whole segment begins, they're sitting down, they got their Dunkin' Donuts coffee in it, because they're like all smiling. And Bill Belichick's smiling, which still to this day weirds me out a little bit. And he's like, yeah, you know, having coffee with the coach. Hey, how about Josh Gordon? All of a sudden, the smile turns into, I ain't talking about it.
Why?
And he got like a six-word answer there.
Why? Why even yesterday? I'm sure you were you there yesterday? Or
no.
Okay, but you obviously heard this. The media, after basically finding out that the Patriots had made a trade for Josh Gordon, tried to get anything out of Belichick. He refused to talk about it. You know, when the deal is done, maybe we'll discuss it. He's on the practice field less than an hour later.
Well, not only that, like, his jersey was on sale on NFLshop.com.
Yeah.
Like,
he's got
the
locker next to Brady. I mean,
he was in the depth chart on the website.
Jesus, no, we're talking about the deal's not done. And maybe it wasn't. I think there was some sort of technicality or whatever.
I mean, what's that about?
I think, it's screwing with the media.
Sure.
I think probably it's
something. He likes it.
There probably came a point where it was like turned into a game for him, and maybe he'll keep playing that game today. And then number two, and I'll give Tommy Curran credit for this, because he brought it up on a show I was on with him the other night. He said maybe Cleveland announced it before he would have liked them to announce it.
But the Patriots had announced it at that point.
His theory was that maybe the Browns and Patriots announced it like bang, bang, right? Like within 10 minutes of each other. And his theory was, well, maybe Stacey James and the Patriots PR department put it out when they saw Cleveland put it out.
Okay.
I don't know.
Oh,
I mean,
Stacey James is in trouble. Maybe he can quit busting our balls for a while. All right, so anyway.
let's talk about what you were
saying. Let's get into this.
The Johnny Manziel thing is interesting.
Yeah, okay. So Josh Gordon, who's, of course, now a New England Patriot, obviously had troubles in Cleveland. That's why they traded him away. He's played very little football over the course of the last 4 years. So Johnny Manziel was here. When Johnny Manziel was in Cleveland, they were very close.
Yeah, and that was – so Gordon had come off the big year in 13. They draft Manziel. And, I mean, the thought is at that point, like, these are two guys we're going to build around. And so I think in a lot of ways, especially after some of the infrastructure was taken out, and I actually looked up the story I did on this from 2016. They had like a trainer assigned to Gordon. They had a psychiatrist assigned to Gordon. They had all this infrastructure around him. All those guys got fired. And so then you come back in 14, you draft Manziel, and now all of a sudden those two guys are sort of the faces of the franchise, you know? And they became close, and Johnny was partying the same way he partied at A&M. It's one of those things where it's like, if you're winning the Heisman Trophy and you're, you know, the toast of college football, like, why are you going to change the way you're acting all of a sudden when you have money? It just sort of amplifies who you are.
Sure.
Right? And so, you know, it's certainly one of those things where you have a guy who's very easily influenced. Now all of a sudden he's put around a guy who in Manziel, who's, they're both from Texas. They've got similar background. And all of a sudden, Josh Gordon's being taken down that path again where he's partying with Manziel. Now, I don't think the difference, like, part of it is, so with Johnny, I think, like, a big piece, like, the biggest piece of this is they just like to party, and then that kind of, he developed a problem from there. With Gordon, I don't think partying was the problem.
It was covering up for insecurities.
It was insecurity. It was
self-medicating.
Right, it was self-medicating. It's actually, like, considerably, like, sadder with Gordon.
Oh, sure.
Like, what's happened, you know? And it's not just weed either. I mean, it's codeine. It's other stuff, too.
You know?
So there's, like, I think a big piece of this was, what, like, that year, that year, 2014, when Johnny was in the building, like, it was, Johnny was sort of leading Josh down the wrong path.
So with Josh Gordon, it obviously on paper with the amount of games that he has not played, it seems like a really big deal. Like this guy can't stay on the field because he keeps getting suspended. However, let's say that we live in a world where marijuana is legal in the NFL because a lot of these guys play, they smoke before games. We know this. It's a normal thing.
Yep.
Let's say it was legal that entire time. Would Josh Gordon would he have been an effective player despite everything else you know about him during that period of time? Or was his addiction so bad, or is it just because he missed those games with the suspension does it look worse than it is?
I don't know. I honestly, I wish I could tell you, how many of the tests were for weed and how many of the tests were for codeine. And, there was...
He was suspended for weed, though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's the thing that gave him the bulk of his suspension.
He was suspended, yeah. I mean, but we don't, would he have tested positive for codeine if he hadn't tested positive for weed? You know, there's other pieces to this where, a lot of times, and they've sort of changed the policy the last couple of years, but there were certain ways that got like players' agents, players' handlers would cover for guys. And so if you failed a, test for recreational drugs, it would always be weed. If you failed a PED test, a lot of times, an agent would come out, even if he wasn't telling the truth, would come out and say, well, it was Adderall. Because most people figure, well, Adderall is a party drug, or, Adderall is not like taking,
Well, the way I look at Adderall
anabolic steroids.
Sure. But people take, millions of people take Adderall.
Normal people aren't downing Deca.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There's kids taking Adderall. So you would think, maybe you're, this is helping
more relatable
in some way.
Yeah. More relatable. Yeah.
Sure. All right. So on another angle, what's going on with Rob Gronkowski? Because that was kind of came out of nowhere when
Reggie, can I just double back for a second?
Sure.
Just okay, so do you think the Patriots in the way that they do business is going to be beneficial for Josh Gordon, or is he too far gone?
Great question. It's a great question because I think the handling of him is going to be key.
Because they've messed up before.
They put Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi and Rob Chudzinski, when they were there, put so much infrastructure around him. And remember, they almost traded him that year too. They were within probably 10 minutes of dealing him to the Niners at the trade deadline because the issues were still there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they wind up hanging on to him, and he had a 1,600-yard year. I mean, I don't need to tell you guys, down the street, he ran past Aqib Talib, one of the more impressive physical displays of athleticism I've seen in person before.
Yeah.
He's the one time it worked for him, there was all of this positive reinforcement around him. And that's, the biggest question for him because, this isn't a positive reinforcement type of place,
Is it with the players though?
Part of it for the Browns is that they invested a second round pick in him. And so there was real motivation, let's get this right. This guy could be a major part of our future. At the time he was very young. For the Patriots, they're buying low on him. And they're bringing him in the middle of a season. They've got a revolving door at receiver to begin with. And they've never, the reason that they can take this risk is because they can get rid of these guys so quickly.
So you're saying they might not
invest as much into him
because they can get rid of him and he's not that important.
Their history would tell you what they're going to do with him is they're going to throw him in the ocean and say, can you swim?
Right.
That's their history.
I don't know if they make an exception. How fragile is his place on this team? How much will they put up with before they, is it this
I
thing
mean, I
where,
think he has a lot, I think he has, a, I think he has a, I think he has more leash than Corey Coleman had.
Okay.
And Corey Coleman's back now, but I think he has more leash than Corey Coleman had. I can tell you that they did plenty of research over the days leading up to doing this. So this wasn't a haphazard thing. Whereas I think some of the other acquisitions, you're just throwing darts. This was thought out, and they took a few days to go through this and everything else. So I think he has a more leash than some of the guys who've been in here. I mean, if he's out of condition for 2 or 3 weeks, and he's not getting himself into shape, or he's late for anything, I can't imagine they'd put up with that.
Did it say anything to you that they put him right next to Brady's locker?
They've done that to so many guys. So,
isn't that just kind of corny?
I think Joey Galloway was next. It's like
Moss.
I remember that. I remember Moss. Yeah, I remember that. Like there was that old story from. Remember those the Urban Meyer Florida teams, which were basically like the Mean Machine, right? Like 2008, 2009. Like the old thing was like Hernandez was one of those guys. Like if a guy like looked like he was going the wrong way, they'd have him room with Tebow on the road. This is like the Patriots version of that. Like
that,
like,
in the locker room.
And it did so good for them. It corrected everything. Because don't you think that it's obviously symbolic to put someone next to Brady, like Brady's gonna do anything for the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Galloway was next to him. I think we've seen it with at one point it may have been Chad Jackson, I think, was next to him at one point. So it's not like this is like...
It's like if you look at Brady's balls long enough, all of a sudden you have these premonitions of greatness. All right, Bert, we will continue talking to you. It's interesting stuff. And we'll get into Gronkowski and what's going on with him. Boy, is he fragile. Hachi machi, this guy.
Like game operation.
I mean, it's a struggle for him. If I was advising him... In this offseason, I would have told him not to play football. I hope that I like him, and I hope that his post-football career is manageable. But we will get back with Bert Breer, 617-779-0985. Here are the headlines.
Toucher and Rich.
.985 The Sports Hub. It's Feed the Fan Fridays, presented by Stop and Shop, the official supermarket of the New England Patriots. I'm becoming Bostonian. Be listening at 7:50 this morning for your chance to score a $100 Stop and Shop gift card to feed their fandom. StopandShop.com coming up at 7:50 now. Bert Breer from MMQB is in studio. We heard yesterday that Gronkowski had tweaked a ankle during practice. And, I mean, he's not going to stay healthy.
It's one of, like, the body parts that's been surgically repaired, too.
Yeah.
So, like, this is what you deal with him. Like, this is part of the deal with him. The fact that he did practice, like, that he was limited, but he wasn't, like, completely out of commission is encouraging. You know, but I think these are things that you have to manage going forward. And the interesting part about it to me is how, like, these are going to affect his incentives. Like, when I saw, like, when Gronk did that deal, like, the thing that I, like, if I were him, I would sort of, it would bug me, that would sort of irk me about it, is, like, that they keep kind of, like tightening the screws on, like, well, if you're available, well,
sure,
if you're healthy, well, if you're, you know.
And he's saying, I have, you know, given up my body for this team. You knew when you drafted me that I had this chronic back condition.
Right, and every contract that they've done with him has been, like all about protecting, like, the team's interest against the injuries.
Right.
Despite the fact that he's been incredibly productive whenever he's been healthy.
Sure.
If I'm him, like, I don't know. I would look at that. I would look at the way that the contracts have been structured. It would bug me, like, the way that everything is sort of tied to his health.
So, Bert, that being said, and you're absolutely right, it would have bugged me too, because, you know, a lot of it's, I mean, it's not his fault that he gets hurt this way. It's the way that the game is played.
Well, and it's also, like, sort of what they ask him to do, like the role.
Oh, absolutely.
They ask him to play.
Yeah, absolutely. So, do you think that makes it, like, if he got real banged up this year, which there's a 60% chance he will. Do you think that makes it more likely that he walks away?
Sure. Because when players, like, when they come out, like, a lot of times what happens, the way that the players' minds work is that, so at the end of the year, a lot of players think about retiring. Because it's
sure.
hard to get through an NFL season, and
right.
you're beat up,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of guys, like, have to get A, B, and C cleaned up after the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of guys come out of a year, a lot of veteran guys come out of the year and say, like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And then 2-3 months pass, and okay, like, I'm feeling okay again. And then you get into spring, and you're not really hitting, but you're running around. I feel good. Like, I feel like I can go again. And then you're staring down the barrel of training camp. And it's like, do I really want to do this again?
And then it's halftime at the Bills game. And you say, yeah, right. I think I'm going to retire.
And so I...
you see that sweet, sweet dildo on the side of the,
yeah.
the, side of the field. Yeah.
You know what I want to see? I want to see this. I really hope there's surveillance video floating around somewhere of like the Bills parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
And the single car pulling out.
It's like, I'm out. Oh, that is the best. That is the best.
Of course, like part of it for Gronk is like I think is just coming back from each of these things. And you guys remember like CBS did a great feature on Jerome Bettis at the end of his career, and he used to like he said, like it showed everything that he had to do to get himself in a position to play. And what he would say was, like, early in my career, I would feel okay on Tuesday, and then it became Wednesday, and then it became Thursday. And then by the end, it was like on Saturday, he's still like just struggling to get himself physically in a position where he can play again. And I think that's where Gronk is. You know, it's like just it's really hard to get yourself in a position where you're ready to play. I don't think Sunday's ever going to be the problem for Gronk, and I don't think for most guys Sunday's the problem. It's Monday through Saturday. It's mm-hmm. do I want to go through everything that's going to take to get me to Sunday? That's what's so unique about Brady. Like, I think that's what's different about Brady, is Brady actually likes all that other stuff.
But don't you think now, Bert, because I've been saying this, is that with the new rules on hitting quarterbacks, which you basically can't do,
yeah,
that Brady's situation, maybe not playing at this level, but quarterbacks are going to play much longer into their career.
And we've seen it. I mean, we don't, like, for as much of a problem as Pittsburgh has had in general with their locker room, Ben's still playing pretty well.
Sure.
Like, Rivers still looks good. Eli still looks good. And no one's talking about those guys, the 2004 class.
Yeah.
Like, if this was 10 years ago and you had those guys, and those guys are all 36, 37 years old.
That'd be insane.
We'd all be talking about, like when are they going to fall off the cliff? But because those guys are coming up behind Brady and Breeze, who are 3 and 4 years older than them, like, people are looking at them and it's like, oh, well, that's normal. No, it's not normal that those guys are still playing that well at 36, 37 years old.
All right, speaking of quarterbacks, this is something that if you would have told me about this 4 weeks ago, I would have said you were crazy. But everything has changed over the last couple of weeks, ever since Nike ran the ad with Colin Kaepernick. I believe that owners now look at the perception of what fans think about him in a completely different light now that Nike launched that campaign, and he is like the stock went through the roof.
Yeah.
It seems to almost be an overwhelmingly positive. It completely outweighs the negative. There's a rumor that came out yesterday, started by Colin Kaepernick's lawyer, Mark Garago. How you pronounce his name? The OJ guy?
Garagos,
either way. Yeah. But he seemed to float out there that Colin Kaepernick is now being looked at by two teams, one of them being the Raiders and the other being the Patriots.
We didn't say that directly.
Well,
the one caveat we should put on all this is that guy Garagos has teased like 10 different things over the last 6 months. Like something huge is coming.
Sure,
like,
he has
a rule, and like 99% of it's been nothing.
However, has everything changed since then? Are we now in a different environment where you actually could see him get signed again and play
in
the NFL?
I don't know how badly he wants to play. I just don't I had a conversation with a quarterbacks coach who I just happened to like be with this guy. It's like 2-3 days after one of those training videos came out. You know, they've been leaking the training videos, like whatever he's training in Houston or he's training in, and then they'll have a reporter show up and act like he just like, you know, walked across and saw Colin Kaepernick. Like what, like a quarterbacks coach I know, like I was happened to be with him a couple days later, said like, did you see that Kaepernick video? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, God, it looks like he hasn't been working at all. Most people, like a normal, like me or you, would look at the video and say, well, the ball, like it's coming out a million miles an hour and everything else. But the quarterback's coach pointed out to me, he's like, his mechanics look terrible. Like, it looks like he hasn't been working at all. And so, you know, I think there is that question that's kind of lingered out there, is like whether or not he actually wants to play. And I think that's what he'd need to prove to a team. It's like, I want to play. Because you're taking on a lot. If you're signing him, you're still taking on a lot. Like, there's still going to be like 10 satellite trucks outside your building the first day you sign them and all of that different stuff. And if you want to, if you're going to deal with everything that's going to come with it for a backup, then I think there has to be some level of understanding, like that the guy's really going to be engaged and really wants to play.
Well, and real quick, when the name of the Patriots is thrown out there and all of this, how much do you believe that if indeed he was in football shape and yep. and they've done their due diligence and research?
Well, oh, I don't think they'd shy away from it. Like, I
think it's a positive.
Now. I think it'd be a positive. Like, I think it would make the ownership look good.
Yes.
I think it would make the ownership look
good. See, that's, I think, the entire thing is that they yeah. saw the. It he appeals to a demographic that these teams wouldn't appeal to.
And this market wouldn't. Like, this is not a market where.
This isn't the Cowboys.
Yeah, this isn't Dallas. This isn't yeah. Houston. This isn't New Orleans.
Right.
Like, and that's what's that, like, the whole anthem issue. That's what's so interesting about it to me is that. The reason why all of these owners can't agree on an anthem policy is because it's intensely local. I mean, look, the national revenue, fixed, right? Like, the television revenue is going to be the same for the next 5 years. You mm-hmm. know what you're getting there. Like, this isn't affecting the national revenue check. Where the anthem thing is affecting teams is on the local level and their local sponsorships and their local partnerships and their sweetholders and all of that different stuff. And that's why... different owners have such vastly different viewpoints on this because the anthem issue is no big deal for the Niners, is no big deal for the Eagles, is no big deal for the Patriots, is no big deal for the Bears, but it is a massive problem for the Saints, for the Texans, for the Cowboys. And I think signing Kaepernick would sort of fit into that too, where for certain teams, it could be an issue. For the Patriots, I don't think it'd be a problem.
See,
at all.
I think you're the Patriots. It's not a bad move. And
I think it makes Kraft. I actually think locally yes. it makes Kraft look good.
I agree. And I think that when you saw that Nike was brilliant in doing what they did, and that's the audience that the NFL's after. I mean, they want young people to be into the product.
Is Kaepernick better than Brian Hoyer right now, Kaepernick?
Or does it matter?
Right now? So I think if you had a full year of him, you probably get him to a point where he'd be more effective. In a pinch hitting situation, where say Brady, and God, it's hard to even envision Brady having an injury that would take him out for 2 or 3 weeks, right? But mm-hmm. like, say there's an injury that takes him out for 2 or 3 weeks, you might rather have Brian Hoyer in there because he's played a lot more recently. He knows your system back and forth.
What about after 6 weeks? So, you know, just a little bit of time to pick up the system.
I mean, I think that there's probably, you know, then you pick up the system, you also learn him and you probably have different ways to use him. He'd be an interesting, like, it'd be interesting from the standpoint of like, and I don't think the guy is like,
I'm just trying to think if they would go down that road.
Good player at the end. Like, the last 2 years, he wasn't very good. That said, you could create some issues for defenses with him
yeah.
that are different where, like, Hoyer, like, after, like, in a 6 or an 8 week window, like, by the end of it, I think you'd probably have some pretty rough offensive performances. You could do some things that would be different that other teams wouldn't be prepared for with Cap. Sort of like a toss-up. It just depends on whether or not you're open-minded enough to do some of the things that it would take to make
If they signed him, it would be Sports Talk Christmas.
Yeah.
It would just, like, heads would explode everywhere.
Oh, my father would be upset. All right. We'll be right back with more Burt Breer.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Feed the Fan Fridays, presented by Stop and Shop, the official supermarket of the New England Patriots. Car number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0985. We'll score a $100 Stop and Shop gift card to feed their fandom. StopandShop.com already. Mark, go ahead.
Oh, boy, guys. Well, first of all, let me get out of the way. I'm a Rollins College graduate.
Hell yeah. What year?
Hell yeah. 1990.
Oh, what fraternity?
I actually did not pledge a fraternity. I thought the fraternity system was weak and owned by the school, and I decided to go my own way.
You didn't, but the Sig Eps there, you liked them?
No, I have a lot of friends. I talked to a Sig Ep yesterday on the phone, actually.
There you go. That's right. Absolutely. You didn't like those Phi Delta Thetas, though.
Whoa.
The Phi Deltas, they're a bunch of fuddy-duddies.
Right, exactly. So here's the deal, Snowflakes. I'm a little bit put out by your attitude about this Kaepernick thing. I think you are woefully underestimating how important not only anthem issue is in these parts of the world, but also the mere fact that you bring Kaepernick in that would be so, what he's doing is so disrespectful of the flag. I think you are way miscalculating.
Okay, well,
he would be acceptable.
I'll tell you this. You hang on a second. Let me talk. You graduated in 1990. They don't care about you.
No, I know. And when you
so they don't care about you. So if I bring a guy in that's been incredibly effective at marketing a shoe brand. In fact, a multi-conglomerate corporate is as big a faceless corporation as you can have, and I've made it a underground sensation. It almost seems dangerous and appeals to young people, which is what the NFL, who they want to appeal to right now. That would work. It's not about kneeling during the anthem. It's about numbers. It's about making money.
So the longtime Patriot fan, I'm 51 years old.
Yeah, so they don't care about you.
You're telling me that Bob Kraft is just going to kiss away his season ticket base and just screw it all. I want the millennials coming in here, and that's what I want to go after.
Yes.
And to hell with everybody else.
Yes.
No, I think you would have a real problem.
And I don't think that you would give up your tickets if they signed Kaepernick either.
I don't think
so. Fred, I would not watch another Patriots game.
And by the way, I thought...
See, I don't believe that.
I thought snowflakes were people who are easily offended. We're not offended.
No, I'm not trying to offend you. I think your position on this is really, really weak. And I don't think... I actually think you guys are spineless, just rolling with the punches and thinking Kaepernick's a good thing for anybody.
He made Nike millions and millions of dollars.
I don't care. I'm not buying...
Yeah, you don't care, and they don't care about you.
Well, you know what? Then if he doesn't care about me, he doesn't care a lot about other people.
Good.
And I think the more you're saying that,
the audience, you are aging out of a demographic that they care about. They don't care. They'd much rather have a bunch of 18 to 49 year olds go into their games, and especially 18 to 34 year olds going to their games and consuming the product than you.
Okay. Well, I think it's not 49. I think you're offending people. Anybody over the age of 35 or 30, you're offending right now.
That's not the case.
I'm 38.
I'm 43, and I don't care.
Well, the public spoke. I mean, the entire reputation that this whole Nike campaign was is almost overwhelmingly positive. Yes. You had a couple guys burning shoes, but, I mean, the stock's never been higher.
And they're appealing to the audience that they wanted to appeal
to.
I've
gotten crushed for some of the reporting I've done on this, which I believe a big reason why he doesn't have a job right now is because his play declined to a level where it just wasn't worth it for teams to take on all the extra stuff that you were going to take on by signing him. But I don't think, I don't think in this market, I don't think it would be a big deal.
You guys... Really, the wearing the socks that has the police officer as pigs, you really think that plays?
I think that was a massive mistake. That was a terrible mistake by him. He shouldn't have done that. That was also, I mean, look, part of the kneeling thing, right? And he actually went to Nate Boyer, who is a veteran who fought in Afghanistan, and asked, what's the best way to demonstrate during the national anthem? And Boyer told him, don't sit down, kneel. And so there's a level of, I think people are making this about something that it's not about. It's not about the flag. It's not about the military. It's about using a platform that you have there to get people's attention and trying to redirect that attention towards something
else. I think that part of it has been debated, and I understand, Bert. It's just that Fred's just looking at it purely from, would this be a business decision that the Patriots would make? And right now,
I don't think it
sure seems that way. I mean,
no, I think it would be a positive.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be a big positive.
Here's the thing: I think the people that will get angry about this aren't tuning out anyway. So even the people that are getting angry about this, they're not going to stop coming to the games. They're not going to stop watching the games. And then you'd have a whole other group of people that you'd probably be endearing yourself to.
What is the problem with professional sports outside of the NBA? Is that they're aging out. People are aging out, and if you have an opportunity to bring a young audience in. That's what they want.
And a young audience is very difficult to reach.
Exactly.
Very difficult.
That's why Nike's thing was so brilliant in that they've taken a faceless corporate, brand and made it this underground thing that seemingly underground thing that young people have deemed as cool, which people try to do 365 days a year. Brendan, go ahead.
Morning, guys. This is unbelievable. Listen to these wine bags already coming out of the woodwork. I think there probably is a little bit of validity here to this Kaepernick thing, just to the fact that there's no contingency plan at quarterback, number one. Maybe they want to get a guy in here to start grooming just in case Tom walks away at the end of the year. And I also do think there is an aspect of it that it is kind of a business move. They're not known as the most colorful franchise in the league, if you know what I mean.
And also, Boston is looked upon as a racist town. And if you bring in Kaepernick, you're going against all of that.
Yep. I don't hate it. I mean, the guy's not hurting anybody. This guy's talking about you're hurting people by bringing him in. What's he talking about? Who are you hurting? Like, it's unbelievable these people.
Let me give you, because my friends often ask me about this because they know I do sports radio. Here's my theory on kneeling for the anthem. Why would you run around for my enjoyment and hit each other? That's all I care about. What do you care about some moron kneeling during the anthem? Is it any different than a...
I wouldn't call him a moron. I mean, if they're kneeling for the anthem, there's obviously a reason.
They're running around. You're not going there to see...
People are getting upset about things that, like, they didn't care about.
Right,
like,
Chomsky.
That's what he's getting at. That's what Fred's getting at, is that, like, people, like, got all upset about, like, the news came out, like, I think it was CBS or Fox, whoever it was. Like, it was a news item. Like, they're not going to broadcast the anthem. They never broadcast the anthem.
And plus,
like, the only game you ever see the anthem on was the Super Bowl, right? Like, I don't think we ever watched, like, the anthem is never part of the
game. What do I care about a guy? The only reason that I pay any attention to him is to throw a football around for 3 hours on a Sunday. The only reason I care about him is he might be on my fantasy team. What do I care what his political beliefs are?
And also, I think the Patriots also understand, and I believe the Crafts know this, is that everyone who says they're going to give up their tickets if this happens, they're not giving up their tickets. Percentage of people that would give up their season tickets would be 2%.
I just don't understand why you care.
Oh, it would be way lower than that.
Well, the only reason I would say, there's going to be a couple
2%?
People. I think 2% because those are going to be the most
significant number. That's just, I think it's less than that. There's just a lot
run around and play with the football.
You can find a lot of people who, you know, scream and stomp about these things and say that they're never going to watch again. Who, like, those are all empty threats.
Hey, you know what? This is actually a decent point. Line 5 is a decent point.
All right. Well, we got to go to headlines, and then we can come back
all right.
and do this.
Am I sticking around for the break?
I'll stick
all
around,
right,
great. Yeah.
Run and hit each other. you write a big manifesto. I'm not going to read it.